So today I'm talking with Dr. Mira Gonzalez, Assistant Professor of Anesthesiology at Temple University Hospital, and we're going to talk about the risks and benefits of social media for the physician. So thanks for talking to me today.
Hello. So I guess I'll start off talking about why this is important for physicians today. So social media is the way we communicate these days. About 70-80% of Americans are using social media, and the numbers will continue to increase as the older generations get more and more involved with social media use. So it is a huge impact on society today.
So, you know, what are some of the, obviously you hear about a lot of people getting into trouble by posting something inappropriate, and I think with everybody posting on Facebook or Twitter or other forms of social media, and sometimes they'll post things on, I don't know if it's Snapchat or one of the things that like disappears, and they think it's safer to do that. What are some of the privacy issues that you think it's important for physicians to be careful with when they're opening up their Facebook and maybe there's some work-related thing on their mind, let's just say?
Well, privacy is probably the biggest danger of social media use for the physician, and mostly this relates to HIPAA because there are federal laws protecting patients' privacy, and a lot of people think if they discuss a topic but they take away the patient's name, that's okay. However, there can still be a violation because they're actually defined by the HIPAA privacy rule. There are 18 common identifiers for patient information, and that can include, aside from name, birth date, social security number, et cetera, it can also include any identifying marks on the patient, for example, tattoo, or even the date that the surgery was performed or the procedure or the patient was seen. So even if you talk about something that happened today in your office, that could be a potential privacy violation as per the privacy rule for HIPAA. And anytime this happens, you hear about this stuff in the media, it becomes a very big deal. And again, it is a federal violation as well.
So I guess I'll tell you that, this is, being listened to on a website by orthopedic surgeons, residents, people who are interested in orthopedics for the most part. And it's on a website. There's lecture material here. The lecture material sometimes contains cases. Would you say that, if there's a lecture that you were otherwise giving to an audience where in orthopedics there's a lot of x-rays and you do have some visuals, does it become, potentially more risky when you have this stuff on the internet as opposed to delivering a lecture at a large national meeting or something like that? What additional precautions do people have to take when they put what otherwise seems like academic material right out of a textbook or a lecture and it goes on the internet? Is there a difference there?
There definitely is a difference. Now, when you're giving a lecture in a closed environment, there's only a certain number of people that are seeing it. Anytime you put something on social media, you should consider it to be permanent, even if it's only there for an instant. In your mind, it should always be permanent, because even if you place something on a very short, like a Snapchat or something, someone can take a screenshot of it and save that, and it can be perpetuated, sent to millions of people. So that's the biggest issue, is that, it's not only is it something that continues on and is permanent, but it can be accessed then by millions of people versus, 50 people in a lecture hall. So, the same principle should apply when you're presenting this kind of information in a closed setting. You should try to take away all those patient identifiers. You shouldn't, if you have an x-ray, obviously you're going to take the name out, but you may end up putting the date, and you can't do that according to the privacy rule of HIPAA. Again, you may mess up and accidentally display the date, but in a room of 50 people who are at the same exact level of you and are, the same mindset, no one's going to make a big deal out of it. But if that same picture gets out into social media, somebody may notice it and report it as a violation. So yes, there is a difference.
So can you give me some examples of some privacy issues that maybe not the most egregious, but maybe a privacy issue that some people may not have necessarily thought was a big deal, quote unquote, and really created a problem? Something that you could imagine maybe your colleague doing who is on social media all the time, that was really a major privacy issue.
Sure. You know, there have been examples of, you know, there's a bad car accident in the city that, you know, everybody kind of hears about on the news, and a patient happened to be brought into your hospital, and maybe you mentioned something. You may not say a patient was injured from a car accident that day, but, you know, you say, hey, I had a patient today with this horrible injury, and it could be, you know, presumed that that patient came from that specific incident that everybody on the media, on general media, heard about because it was all over the news. So that could be a patient privacy violation because there's a temporal association with the time that this information had been posted online, even if you didn't give any really specific patient identifiers. So something like that could occur.
Okay. Now, what about, I mean, what forms of social media do you find to be the most, I guess, dangerous when it comes to privacy issues? Are there any certain, you know, websites or methods of social media that, you know, people tend to get more trouble into than others, either by sheer volume of access, like something like Facebook, or because of, I don't know, maybe some other social media website that maybe makes it easier for you to invade patients' privacy?
I think probably the most common places where people get run into trouble is with Facebook and Twitter, and because they're used so commonly. I think about 75% of adults are on Facebook, and probably about 30% are on Twitter. So that's a pretty high number. And because they're used so commonly, it's where people tend to go when they first have an emotion or a thought or an expression that they want to display. That's their first go-to. It doesn't require a lot of thought. You can quickly take out your phone and rant about something within a matter of seconds and post it, you know, to, even if you post it to a small group of people, that can get shared, because you can also share with the click of a button instantaneously, get shared with millions of people. Another way that may cause more problems is like a blog post where you write specifically, sit down and write down detailed information about things. Now, those tend to be a little bit safer, I think, as far as divulging privacy information, because you have to really sit down and think about those things before you write them. And you may actually have time to realize that, well, maybe I should take out this piece of information because this is maybe a patient identifier, this may be inappropriate. Whereas with this quick social media with Facebook and Twitter, you can pull out your phone and do it within seconds. I think that's is a little bit more dangerous.
So what are the legal ramifications of, you know, divulging privacy issues and, you know, when it comes to patient care? I guess issue being a patient or family member recognizes their loved one or themselves being discussed. I mean, how does that often end up from a legal standpoint?
Well, you know, there is a privacy rule from HIPAA, which is a federal law. So there are specific laws protecting against this. The law was written in 1996 before social media even existed, but it does apply to divulgence of this information. So it does apply to social media as well. So therefore, you will not be protected, you know, by putting this stuff on social media. And anytime there's an issue, even if you are part of a private group or a private Twitter feed, all of this stuff is accessible by law enforcement. So if there is a case, they can look at anything that you've posted. Even if you've removed that post, it still exists somewhere in the internet, and they do have access to it.
Okay. Obviously, I think there's a lot, you know, surgeons in particular need to be careful about. What about, you know, how do these things reflect on this physician? Has anybody looked at this, or at least in your experience? I mean, what about the personal image of the physician if they're posting things about patients, or how can physicians maybe use social media better? I mean, how does social media hurt or benefit the physician from the personal image standpoint?
Sure. Well, there are certainly negative aspects to it. If you are posting stuff on your personal page related to things that you may be doing that may not reflect your professional image, for example, getting really drunk, or, you know, maybe pictures of yourself scantily clad, stuff that you may do in your personal life, but, you know, you don't want to show that image necessarily to your patients because of this image that we have of, you know, physicians being very noble and respectable, et cetera. Now, we all do things in our personal lives that, you know, we don't necessarily share with our professional world, but because of social media, those two worlds are starting to collide, and the public now has access to some of our private information because of the accessibility of social media. So that's how it can create a negative image for the physician if some of this stuff gets out. It can have some benefits, though, social media in general, because, like I said, people are using social media in such great numbers, and most people are using social media to get their information, for example, information about goods and services that they want to use. It can be used for marketing, and a lot of medical practices do use it for marketing, just, you know, talking about the services they offer, maybe some new innovative procedure that they're doing. Because again, this is where patients are going to get their information. You can also post post positive reviews. Of course, you can have negative reviews as well. But you know, if there are some positive reviews, it can show that, you know, some positive aspects of your care. And again, people are looking to social media for this type of information. You can also help develop professional connections, maybe other physicians in your specific specialty. If you have a question about something, some type of equipment or some type of procedure, you can, you know, connect with people much more easily than previously when you actually had to sit down and try to find somebody and, you know, connect with them the old-fashioned way. Social media is also a great coping mechanism because, again, this is our instantaneous way. When you're upset, angry, emotional, frustrated, you can pick up your phone and connect with somebody on social media immediately. So this is a great way to, you know, to cope with some of the frustrations you may have or some of the successes you may have as a physician. And it can also create a positive network for your patients because, you know, you may have patients with rare conditions that not a lot of them exist in the area. But if you can create a social network of people around the country or the world that have this particular condition, you can get your patients together to help support each other. And if you are the physician who's facilitating that, that really helps, you know, your image and your respect as a physician.
Okay. I guess one other question I have was, what about, I see people sometimes not use their real name on social media. So for instance, you know, they want to keep their social media profile pretty much just at a very personal level, and they don't want to have really any sort of, you know, anything about their professional life on there at all. And of course, they don't want their image to be seen by patients, by you know, people in their professional workplace necessarily, to be able to see their personal side. So they sometimes don't even use their real name on Facebook or something like that. What are your thoughts on that?
I certainly think that's a good idea. If you really want to separate those two worlds, create like a pseudonym for yourself so that if a patient searches for you, your particular name, they won't find you under that name. But, you know, remember that all this stuff is discoverable in a court of law. So if you have been posting things that are possibly violating the privacy rule of HIPAA, then, you know, they can eventually connect you to that pseudonym and find out what you've been doing, although it'd probably be much more difficult for the general public to do so.
So I think, you know, privacy issues are privacy issues. No matter how you do it, I think you have to be careful that you stay out of trouble and everything's discoverable. But perhaps, you know, if people want to be on social media and really, you know, completely divest that from their workplace and only have it for their friends and family and friends and family related things, then, and they don't want to be seen in a negative light, perhaps at the beach with their friends or something like that, then maybe a pseudonym or something could be helpful. And they're not putting any patient-related information there whatsoever and want to completely keep it separate. Interesting, because, yeah, I do know some people who do that. Well, I mean, are there any last parting thoughts or advice you want to give to our listeners on this topic?
Sure. I think my best advice is if you are about to post something on social media and you're not sure if it's the right thing to do, if you have to ask yourself that question, should I really be posting this? And the answer is probably no. So if you ask yourself that question, just don't do it.
All right. Good advice. Well, thank you very much. And hope to talk to you soon, maybe on another topic. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.